It's the second interception tonight by Garoppolo. The
Raiders are falling apart.
26-yarder, just inside the left hash. Good hold. Spins the laces, and Carlson boots that through. And again, for a third straight game, the Raiders came out and took a 7-0 lead in the first quarter. But Pittsburgh answered with 23 unanswered and held on. So, the Steelers come into Allegiant Stadium, and the road team beats the Raiders 23-18.
From the Findlay Toyota Studio, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, here we go on a Monday. Cofield and Company, interesting football weekend to get into. John Von Tobel is here. Steve Cofield, Damon in the Findlay Toyota Studios as well. I don't know why we're doing two Monday night football games again.
What?
Have you gotten the explanation on this?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. I would agree with you. I don't know why we're doing them if they're not going to do the whole East Coast, West Coast split, 4 o'clock and then 7:30. So
1 hour
that
apart.
I don't get.
1 hour apart with the kicks.
Right. So that I do not understand. I do understand the need and the want and the desire for two Monday night games, but give us a kickoff in L.A. You know what I mean? Come on. Give us a 7:30 p.m. kick time. Let's go.
Or maybe they're just showing us further that they just do not care that much about the markets out here.
And they
do not want to delay at all the start for the East Coast. What's the number? I don't know what it is. 75% or of the population is east of the Mississippi. So that's who they care about.
75% of the population is lame, it sounds like.
Is lame?
Yeah. It's the best time out here, man. 5:30 kicks, 7:30 at night if it goes to the West Coast.
We have to go into a social study about people unwilling to move, unwilling to leave their unhappy lives in other places.
I've said it 1,000 times. The times that I took my trips over there was the worst sports viewing time of my life.
Oh, it's such a wake-up call.
It's terrible. Yeah. Laker games not starting until 10:41 at night?
Mm-hmm.
What is that? It's insanity. Huh? No wonder they're all so angry.
Yeah. If you want to watch sports and you have a real job,
yep.
Good luck. Good luck if you got a hoof of the work, and especially in a lot of Northeast markets, really everywhere, you have to commute. I mean, yep. You got early work. I'm watching the end of a football game at freaking 12:45 at night.
Oh,
and then I got to get up at 5 in the morning and go to work.
And the start times, too. I mean, that's the other part. So obviously it's later, but that's the other thing that threw me off was, for example, Sundays. Games are starting until 1?
Yep.
P.M.?
It's so weird.
It's so
you get up in the morning and then you're like, wait, what's going on here?
I got to wait till the
afternoon. Because you did the AC trip.
Yes.
For a whole season, right? You were in Atlantic City every weekend.
Yes. So you had to wait till 1 p.m. on Sundays until kickoff. It was something that I never really understood.
So you hear Horowitz on the way back, the voice of the Raiders. Do you think he knew what he was getting into with this Raiders organization? Because yesterday was so typical of kind of what we've seen from the Raiders back in Oakland and here. It's just confusing inconsistency. I think we've got some slippage now with the head coach and the relationship with some of the players. You can see there are players who are getting frustrated. Weird play calls. We'll get to that. Weird decisions. And coming out of the game last night, I mean, I get $40 worth of taquitos from 7-Eleven. Sorry about your pizzas. We had a bet last week, Damon and I, over some 7-Eleven food. We're giving them lots of free pops. But I took the Steelers. He took the Raiders. And you heard it. Again, Raiders get off to a good start, middle of the game. Just very poor play. They make a run when they open things up in the fourth quarter, and then when it comes down to it at the end, they can't make the big plays, and I think their coaching let them down. And there were tons of mistakes throughout the game. I was listening to Raider Nation Radio 920 this morning with Clay and Lindsey and Vinny, and here's Vinny going on a long rant about, hey, you know, this team is just not good enough to have all these errors.
The Raiders aren't good enough to overcome the silly stuff that they did. That Max Crosby penalty, I know it was frustration. Mm-hmm. It had nothing to do with the play. I can.
Dumb penalty.
But when it's not even part of the play and it gives them 15 yards, big yards, that help lead to a field goal, that's head scratching. You're not good enough as a team to overcome that. And I'm not just pointing that out to point it out on Max. It's also the delay of game penalties, the illegal procedure penalties, the not lining up correctly penalties. Those types of penalties, you're not good enough.
No.
You're just not the blown assignments on the back end. You're not good enough as a roster. But if you're But if you're negating even breaks that go your way by shooting yourself in the foot, you're not giving yourself any chance to get to your ceiling.
There you go. Good rant. My advice as a veteran radio person, I don't think Max Crosby is going to care that you pointed him out making a mistake.
Right.
So don't back down from that. He made a mistake. It was one of the costly errors. But really good stuff this morning on R&R 920. Those guys start at 7 o'clock, and Vinny brings it. Yeah, it's inexcusable. And it's not all on the players. When things start getting loose, there are coaches who take it personally. Like, we'll play a little Barry Odom from his press conference today. They won. And the beginning of the press conference was, mistake, 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 mistake. Our fault. We have to get better. Coaching, we have to get better. Josh McDaniels, you don't always hear that. And frankly, he's the first guy who should stand up and go, we let down our team in certain situations. I'm still mouth agape over the fact that the narrative coming into this Raiders-Steelers game was the Steelers off a loss. Their fans are like, enough of this Matt Canada guy. Mm-hmm. He's terrible. And then at the end of the game in a key situation, Matt Canada outduels Patrick Graham and Josh McDaniels. What?
Yeah, that final play I thought was really weird. Not, you know, the play that everybody's talking about in the decision-making. When you need a pivotal, like, third down defensively to get them off the field.
You kick a field goal, then the pressure is on your defense and your staff to get a stop inside of three plays, use your timeouts, get the ball back. It's a pivotal third and short. Yep. And what do they do from a schematic standpoint?
They bring six, and one of the key moments is they bring Nate Hobbs, and Hobbs is on Allen Robinson. Yep. And they roll Kenny Pickett out to his left, and they just have Allen Robinson just go out in the flat real quick into the empty void because Nate Hobbs is on his way in, and Pickett's like, oh, smokes. I don't even have to put anything on there. Yep. Just give it to him, and he's going to be fine. And sure enough, they convert it, and that ultimately made a big difference. I was amazed.
Which, by the way, I don't know if there was flexibility, and I apologize. I didn't get to listen to Tomlin or if Canada spoke after the game. If they said, hey, we noticed Hobbs to Pickett's right, mm-hmm. and Kenny then could audible to a rollout to the left, or maybe they had it ready ahead of time, and it just worked out that way. But either way, great game planning in a pivotal moment when you need a first down. You got someone who's going to be coming hard potentially on your right, you know, and your protection is all set to the left, wide open in the flat, no shot for Epps. And you can see him all frustrated, like, I couldn't get there. Mm. Uncovered guy.
And it also speaks to, I think it seemed pretty clear that the thought process for the Raiders was, oh, third and two. Of course they're going to run it here. But when you have, I want to say simple-minded thinking, but I don't have, for lack of a better term, I'll say it. When you have simplistic thinking, like, no, there's different things you could do on a third and two to convert that. You know, I'm all for aggression, especially defensively, but it seemed that the Raiders, you know, on Madden, I don't know, you won't get this, but you might. You know, on Madden, how you can, like, commit to the run sometimes pre-play, like left or right, and crash everybody in. It looked like it's what the Raiders did. It looked like the Raiders held down the left bumper and hit all crash in, and everybody committed, right? You know what I'm talking about,
yes.
Right? And everybody crashes in the interior, and it's like, no, nah, we're just going to toss it out outside, and you're going to convert on a third and two.
By the way, no laughing. No laughing, DeMond.
It's your team.
No, it's not even your team. You had good pizza on the line. I'm getting all high-voiced. You should be the one who's freaking yelling right now. You lost a lot.
I did lose a lot, Steve. I was heartbroken watching that game because I was here running the board. But Lincoln Kennedy, who is the color man on the R&R broadcast, he was voicing my frustrations. I don't know if you guys heard it in the open, but after that second pick, he said the Raiders are falling apart. They're falling apart. And I said, Lincoln, spot on.
Did you say that into the empty void?
Yes, of me alone in the studio. Alone in the studio listening to the broadcast.
You're going
to
catch up with me. I was out watching games yesterday. I just started talking to myself, muttering. If I were a Raider fan, I would have been muttering a lot yesterday. As a Jets fan, I muttered a bunch. That's infuriating. Because for me, coming out of this game, like, I'm not going to downgrade the Raiders a whole lot. And for Raiders fans, chill out. You guys are such babies, so many of you. I saw so much stuff last night about, you know, it's time to move on from some of the best players, trade them. You know, this whole thing, like, if you're not winning Super Bowls, you're not going in. They lost a close game that they could have won. Now, I'm not saying I believe they can be a 10 or 11 win team, but I think both of these teams are basically the same, and I think they have enough problems that they're like 8 or 9 win teams. right? But it's not ready to give up. There's things in the game. They're making mistakes. Jimmy G throwing the ball up, ill-advised a couple of times. It's not over. It's not like, and I don't come out of the game because you're going to have people who are like, great job, Kenny Pick. Okay. He made a good play at the end of the game. He had some decent passes yesterday. It was solid. They didn't blow me away either, but that's why it's infuriating if you're a Raiders fan. Again, don't give up, but you could have won that game. Maybe should have won that game.
Oh, no, you should have.
Okay.
You had 60 penalty yards to 45 for them. You turned the ball over three times. They didn't turn it over once. And you lost by five. You know, like you had an opportunity at the end to tie it. And then, of course, you got the ball back with, you know, about 20 seconds left to potentially take the lead. But either way, it's a one possession game despite being down in both the penalty margin and the turnover margin in a very big way. No, that's a winnable game. And to your point, why you don't want to give all of this up, whatever, like the AFC, you take, what, six teams? Right in the range of seeds 6 to whatever, 10, 11, throw them in a hat and pull three out. They're wild card teams. Like, they're all rated the same.
I listened to radio all on Monday while I'm driving around. And over on Fox Sports Radio with Colin and his sidekick, J-Mac, they're going through the playoff team. It's in the AFC. It's freaking week three. Like, I know that's what people think we should do. But they're mentioning the Chargers are like, you trust them? Like, trust? After three games, you have a... You know,
hey, I don't know what you're talking about. Colts are 2-1. They're the best team in the AFC South, baby.
Exactly. There are some weak teams with 2-1 records. There are weak teams with 3-0 records.
Well, Devontae Adams said he doesn't have time to wait around. So
I don't blame him. He, you know what? I love that he expresses his frustration. He did it during the summer, and then for some reason walked it back. I'm sure he looks out there and he's like, "I'm good for freaking 10, 12, 14, 16 catches. How much more can I do?" Enough. I don't mind him doing it, but okay. The fans getting crazy and, you know, ready to give up. Calm down. So hold that for a second, because the other thing we got to get to, and this will be on the way back. We have a lot of coaching decisions yesterday. Some of them are analytics and game situation and probability. And John loves probability. We got to. I'm putting an
emphasis
on it, because I listen to national radio guys this morning who don't understand probability.
Like, maybe try to open up the offense just a little bit more, because, yeah, you know, Jimmy's frustrated right now, but it's so clearly he's not comfortable back there. He's not, you know, being able to go through his reads efficiently. So, you know, anything to kind of make him more comfortable and get this team, you know, cohesive, I think would like to see.
Now, back to Cofield and Company in the Findlay Toyota studio.
That was one of the callers today on Raider Nation Radio, 920 a.m. Raiders all the time on that station, and giving some feedback there about Jimmy G and his lack of comfort because the run game just really has not been established so far. Now we get to the decision made by Josh McDaniels. Decisions when it was 23-15. Because we opened talking about getting out-schemed on a third and short. A lot of alarms going off today. Third and short. And they got out-schemed. But the decision everyone's talking about, especially outside the market, is 23-15. Field goal. Go for it. There's a lot here.
There is. So I kind of want to present this in a little bit more like even-keeled, right? Because we can go in here like, Josh McDaniels should be fired, right? You can do all that. I don't think you should get that hard. But I do think it's fair to say, I pride myself, and I would say anything to anybody's face that I say in this mic. So, Josh, if you're listening, I think you really need to evaluate the way that you make decisions as a head coach. Because if you go to that decision, down by 8 points, 2:22 left on the clock, and you elect to kick a field goal to cut an 8-point game to a 5-point game, that is the wrong decision to make in that moment. It just flat out is. Now, we could talk about the actual numbers. For those who want it, 4th and 4 on the Pittsburgh 8. The win probability if you go for it, 15.8%. The win probability if you kick, 10.2%. So nearly a 5% difference. Actually, no, just nearly 6% difference in your win probability. An increase in it if you just go for it. Not even getting it. It's just going for it. Attempting it increases your probability of winning that game by that much. You needed to go for it in that moment. And in fact, Josh McDaniels is the only man who has ever done what he did. According to OptiStats, since the two-point conversion was adopted in 1994, the Raiders are the only NFL team to attempt a field goal in the last 3 minutes of the fourth quarter when down by exactly 8 points with less than 5 yards to go for a first down or a touchdown. There is it is mind-boggling that that second time, and I want to stress that second time, that he did not go for that either first down or touchdown. I don't think it's explainable. There's no way. You made a mistake. Now, the first time where, for those who don't remember, they had about a fourth and what? They had a fourth and four or something like that with about 3:22 left to go, or 3:11 left to go. It was the field goal that was good, but it was negated by a Steelers penalty. The win probability difference was minimal there. You go for it 10.7%, you kick it 10.6%. But I don't think there's any question that you need to go for it in that situation. And his explanation afterwards, to me, made no sense. It was kind of like the weird coach speak that he always does, where he doesn't really give you anything. A lot of people kind of focused on one of the things he said is, you know, we needed another possession regardless. Well, I mean, no, you needed a possession to tie the game. Like, you needed to stay alive. You needed a touchdown and the two-point conversion. Like, to bake it down very simply, you needed a touchdown, right, before you kicked it. You needed a touchdown after you kicked it. So, like, there's really no point. You needed to go for it in that moment. And I am frankly astonished that that didn't happen, especially when it came to, like, again, history. You really need to, as a head coach, evaluate what you're doing as a decision maker if that was your choice in that moment. And I think that's a very fair criticism of McDaniels and of that team. There's just no way you don't go for it in that moment. And by the way, you know, there was another win probability thing on Sunday as well when it came to the Chargers. I've never seen a more united front from everybody, even the anti-number people, even the nerds. They were like the anti-nerds. Everybody was like, Josh, what are you doing? I thought it was unacceptable that he kicked that field goal. And I want to say, because I know,
I think the most important thing, is the like you mentioned, the strategy of field goal number one when they hit a 48-yarder with 3.5 left.
So this is
really important.
Right. So mainly the big difference, right, for anybody who's wondering, he's like, well, why does it matter? He kicked a field goal then, and if he kicked a field goal then, or, you know, later, well, it's obviously time, right? You're talking about 3:11 left on the clock with your timeouts in pocket plus the two-minute warning, that if you kick that field goal and it goes through, and then, of course, you try to get the ball back, you're talking about 3:11 to work with. So in that moment, we talked and we opened the show about that 3rd-and-2 that they were trying to force Pittsburgh off the field. You can give up that 3rd-and-2 and still have enough time on the back end to try to force another opportunity to get the ball back. But when you burn that much time, still kick the field goal, your window shrinks so much in terms of what you have to do. You have to literally be perfect. You have to go out there and force a 3-and-out to get the ball back. It was also pointed out, too, and this is the hardcore number stuff, he also made a mistake by burning a timeout before the two-minute warning. Because essentially what you do is you burn over 30 seconds in that regard, right? If you had, there was, I think, 12 seconds before the two-minute warning. You don't call a timeout. You let it run down to the two-minute warning. You lose 12 seconds, but you still have a timeout. Instead, you call the timeout. It gets to the two-minute warning on the other end. You let them burn out the play clock before they give it back to you.
When the Rebels were at Allegiant Stadium, this happened.
The kick is on the way, and the kick is good! The Rebels, with 5 seconds left, have retaken the lead 40-37 over Vanderbilt. Oh, baby!
Can the Rebels repeat the excitement and get the win as they host the Hawaii Rainbow Warrior football team? It's the battle for the Golden Pineapple, and all the fun starts with pregame Saturday at noon and kickoff just after 1 on ESPN Las Vegas.
Joe's Seafood, prime steak and stone crab. The legendary seafood restaurant of Miami Beach is right on the strip to bring you a true dining destination. Serving USDA prime steaks, quality seafood, and world-famous Florida stone crab claws defined by a standard of hospitality for over a century. Inside the Forums at Caesars, Joe's offers guests an experience that is perfect for lunch, after-work cocktails, social gatherings, to late-night dining. From private, semi-private dining for both intimate and large party gatherings.
Sign up today for a new William Hill Nevada Mobile Sports account, and you can earn a $50 bonus on top of your original $50 or more deposit using promo code GET50. The William Hill Nevada Mobile Sports app allows you to bet on the go from any iPhone, iPad, or Android device from anywhere in Nevada. Sign up today, and you'll never miss another bet. With the largest wagering menu, the mobile sports app features live in-play betting on all major sports. For more information and to see participating sign-up locations, visit williamhill.us. Must be 21. Gambling problem? Call or text 1-800-522-4700.
At Bank of America, we learn what matters most by asking our customers one simple question. What would you like the power to do?
I'd like the power to worry less.
The power to make my parents comfortable.
The power to...
agree on a monthly budget?
Oh, hey, that'd be nice.
No matter what your financial goal is, we're here to help. Bank of America, what would you like the power to do? Bank of America NA, member FDIC, equal credit opportunity lender.
Hey, Las Vegas, Friendly Ford says yes to you.
Yes!
Your neighborhood Ford store, close by on North Decatur, just off the US 95. Friendly makes it easy with a huge selection of Ford vehicles, including Bronco, Maverick, Explorer, F-150, Mach-E, and more. All the cool stuff, now with free pickup and delivery for all your service needs. Friendly Ford, delivering you the best customer satisfaction in sales, service, parts, and body shop for 53 years.
At the Home Depot, Saturdays are about two things: getting ready for company with the Samsung Family Hub Plus refrigerator,
and football.
That's right, Kirk Herbstreit. Search for recipes, check out scores, or even stream the game to the screen at the same time, so you never miss a second of the action, which means you can make your famous buffalo chicken dip and have
more time for football.
For football. Upgrade your Saturday with Samsung and the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
What can you say about the performance from your quarterback, Kyle McCord, to finish that drive?
Toughness. Toughness, that's it. Physicality, cross the board, finish it off, having guts. Like, I'd like to know where Lou Holtz is right now. What he said about our team, I cannot believe. This is a tough team right here. We're proud to be from Ohio, and it's always been Ohio against the world. And it'll continue to be Ohio against the world. But I'll tell you what, I love those kids, and we got a tough team.
Now, back to Cofield and Company in the Findlay Toyota studio on ESPN Las Vegas.
My Lord. Someone give Ryan Day a hug.
You always like it when the underdog, the plucky underdog with no real big financial backing comes through.
Well, you know what's great about that? And we'll set up what Holt said and then more of what Day said, because he wasn't done. So Notre Dame falls at the end of Ohio State. Ohio State kind of stuffs it down their throat, also had a really, you know, a lot of good pass plays down the stretch to get it down on the doorstep. What's great about that and what's great about college football is almost every program, no matter how awesome they are, can find motivation in something someone says. Just one person has to say, basically, that you don't win a national championship every year, this is your flaw, and then you can use it. I mean, it's illogical. Those of us listening to it, like, you just mocked on it, like, relax, Ryan Day. Like, I've never heard Ohio against the world. You're a superpower program with tens of millions of dollars backing you. You're the one who, in a plea for more money, Ryan Day, last year was like, oh, we're going to need, you know, $13 million to keep our offense together. Like, do you realize the absurdity of having to say that? That you have to go, you already have all this money, and then you're like, hey, guys, but you got to give more. He's got everything at his disposal. But what Lou Holtz gave him was awesome motivation. Listen to Holtz here. So Holtz is on, was this the pregame or the McAfee show? I don't know. It was Friday or Saturday, whatever. Because I watched a bunch of this, and I actually have some comments on the coverage on the ground in South Bend.
Can I ask really quickly?
Yeah.
Because I know that I heard him on the pregame, you know, college game day.
Okay.
But I also heard that maybe Ryan Day got his wires crossed and actually heard the McAfee show and somebody in a Lou Holtz mask impersonating him making comments about Ohio State.
I don't know.
And
I...
that's what upset him and not what actually Lou Holtz said.
All right, well, here's we have multiple Holtz. So here's Lou Holtz talking about Ohio State.
And I coached at Ohio State under Woody Hayes. We won the national championship when I was there.
That's right.
So I'm proud of that. However, he has lost to Alabama, Georgia,
right.
Clemson,
right.
Michigan twice. And everybody that beats him does so because they're more physical than Ohio State. And I think Notre Dame will take that same approach.
Okay. So he made 2 points. We'll play the other one later, but 2 points about physicality and Ryan Day's Ohio State wilting. So that's what he was basing it on.
Sure.
It wasn't a fake cut. 88-year-old Lou Holtz is talking trash and getting the Notre Dame crowd fired up. Yeah, give me your comment, because I got a lot on this.
Well, here's the thing. Ryan Day's wrong, because the criticisms of Ohio State at times are true, but it's not about his players. It's about him. He is not great as a coach at times. I mean, let's go back to that game. Their penultimate drive, where you run up on a necessary fourth and one, right, because you're down by four, and they try to do the they try to get you to call off sides, jump off sides, which never happened. It never works, by the way. It never works.
Like one of 50 times, one of 100.
One of 50,000.
It doesn't work with your cadence, though.
Right. Yeah. But then here's the dumb part.
It's terrible.
So then after that, in a pivotal moment, he burns a timeout to then run an end around, which gets stuffed 2 yards behind the line of scrimmage. They're so insanely lucky that they were in the position to win the game. And every criticism I've heard of Ohio State, like, yeah, do people be like, oh, the physicality kind of gets them? Sure. But a lot of what I've heard is, Ryan Day, you've got to get better, dude. You're not really great as a play caller.
Give me Ryan Day, too.
What did they prove to you tonight in this victory that you'll take away and run with?
Toughness. Everybody's questioning these kids all the time. We had one bad half the last couple years. That's it. These guys are warriors right here. To come back and win, I'm emotional about this for a reason. A lot of people question these kids and say a lot of things about them. I love them. When someone attacks your family, to come in and win like this is special. It's a great win for our program.
Yeah. You don't question the family. He was breaking down over Lou Holtz.
He also, at one point, they asked him like a real question. He's like, I got to take a deep breath.
He did.
Like,
yeah, he said, she wanted something on a play call, and he caught himself. He's like, man, I'm getting way too worked up. I like that. I like the emotion after a game. And
sure.
Yeah, the guy has flaws, and he can be a little bit whiny. He's a good coach because he can recruit. Listen, this notion that everywhere that has money, it's easy to recruit, everyone wins. It's not the case. You can look at every program that you consider a top 10 program. They've had a period where they made a bad hire. And that person couldn't do what Ryan Day is doing. And I'm not the biggest Ryan Day fan, but I like that. And I like using old man Lou Holtz as motivation. I guess I should take this with a grain of salt, because I would tell Ryan Day to also refrain from punching down, because that's what it is. At this point, Lou Holtz, he has a little more than I thought he did, but he's kind of turned into a cantankerous jackass. He's still out on the speaking tour here and there. Holtz is one of those guys, and you guys in the audience, most of you have gotten really soft. You know, when people get older, you kind of forget who they were and what they did. In Holtz's case, talking about toughness, Lou Holtz quit on an NFL job because he couldn't handle it. He walked away with 3 games left in the season. So from that point forward, for the next 50 years, I don't want to hear about toughness. I don't want to hear about gutting it out. Shut up. Okay? You're a phony. You've always been a phony. And he was always the one with the stupid storytelling about, you know, it's Notre Dame against the world. Solid college football coach, but cut it out. All right, rolling on. This has become a regular Monday thing. I really enjoy it. As Steve Kim, who we are going to hit up for some boxing on the Canelo fight this week, but is great on football, and especially if you follow his Twitter account. I mean, there's so much stuff and so many contributors that he's retweeting. It's dynamite stuff. At Steve Kim 323. What's up, Steve?
Mr. Cofield, how you doing?
I'm good. John Von Tobel is here as well. Say hi to John.
John, hello.
Hi, Steve.
I never want to have the co-host feel like he's ignored. All right, we're going to go back and forth between NFL and college. And today we're examining decisions in the NFL, coaching decisions down the stretch. Give me what you thought of the fourth down go for it by Staley at his own 24.
Staley still has not figured out that football is not played on a spreadsheet. It's actually played on grass and field turf by human beings. I just don't get it. I personally, it's not even about the results. There comes a point in time, first of all, that Charger team seems to underachieve, even though they were a playoff team. And some of the decisions that he makes, to me, are mind-boggling. And I actually think he got very lucky that the Vikings botched their last set of downs by not clocking the ball before that INT in the end zone. But if, let's say you do go by results, and somehow Kirk Cousins would have jammed that ball into the end zone, not only would I have not allowed Brandon Staley on the team flight home, I may have booked him a flight on Spirit Airlines.
That really stuck it to him. Okay, so we would push back on this show, and I'm not going to speak for John, as that is results-based thinking. But the problem is it's backfired on him a lot, and I don't know how much patience they have with Brandon Staley. But here's if I reverse this a little bit, I think he made the decision because he had a little lack of confidence in his defense being able to stop Kirk Cousins from coming back up the field. And the funny thing is I think it actually worked. Like I said, in reverse, because his defense actually did make a couple of stops. I know a lot of people are like, oh, Kirk Cousins sucked. But his defense actually did come up big, responding after he basically told him, I don't trust you.
Yeah, but in all fairness to me, I did tweet a minute after that thing, just fire him. I don't even care about the result.
Right.
This is a guy that, again, I look at that Charger roster. You have this big-armed, young franchise quarterback who's the pillar, right? You just get the sense they should be more than just a team sneaking into the playoff, and then they certainly shouldn't be a team blowing a 27-0 third-quarter lead in the playoffs. I was actually surprised that he was not jettisoned after that game. Look, they're 1-2. Maybe they can go on a run here, but that Mike Williams injury really cripples them. And I don't know. I just get the sense that the early prime, because he's got a long ways to go, the early prime of Justin Herbert seems to be getting squandered.
So, Steve, I'm very much of the mindset of, you know, I guess you could say I'm in on playing football on the spreadsheet. But the thing for me is that play is not without criticism. The criticism should not be, though, that he went for it. The criticism should be the play call. It's not 1985. No fullback dives and you're averaging 2 yards a carry. The criticism should be the execution of the play call, not the decision to go for it itself.
Yeah, I mean, you can argue that, but again, I keep this in mind. If Brandon Staley doesn't trust his defense, you know what this, we haven't pointed out yet? Wasn't Staley a defensive coordinator or a defensive coach?
Yep.
So it's his unit that he does not trust. It's his unit that can't hold fourth quarter leads. That to me is an indictment. It really is. I just look at the Chargers and I say to myself, that should be a double-digit win team. But I get the sense they're just going to be right around 9-8 and having to win a game with two other teams having to lose to make that third wild card spot. That's the sense that I get.
Why are we assuming that he doesn't trust his defense, though? Why can't the thought process be, I need 2 yards to win a game, let's go get him?
Well, because I think sometimes we overthink it. Sometimes you just punt the ball and you tell a guy, drive on it 70 yards, and you need a touchdown. So, you know, I think you play the game a little bit differently. It's the difference between if you need a field goal to win or tie, or you need to flat out get into the end zone. Well, that's an extra 25, 30 yards at least that a team has to travel. So I just kind of look at it, and look, the analytics I get, but I'm seeing games throughout. Like, let me give you another example of a decision I did not like. The Cowboys were having a really tough time against the Cardinals, 21-13 in the third quarter. They stalled again inside the red zone, right inside the 10. And I'm thinking, you know what? Kick the field goal, make it a five-point game. You still have more than 15 minutes to play. They end up going for it. And again, I'm not – I get it. I am second-guessing here. This is what we do. But in my view, again, we are dealing with humans with emotions. It's incredibly deflating for everybody when you go on a long drive and you come away with nothing. And I get it. Like, I have a real big problem with Josh McDaniel late in the game against the Steelers settling for a field goal. It's different. There's less than 4 minutes to go. The time is a huge variable in all of these decisions, and I just looked at it and I said, you know, there are certain times you go for it, but there's other times there's nothing wrong with doing the old-fashioned thing and just taking the high percentage field goal.
Steve Kim on Cofield & Company, ESPN Las Vegas. All right, we'll go back and forth. Let's go to good coaching now. The season results so far for Mario Cristobal have been good. I saw a really interesting conversation that you had retweeted with Michael Irvin, someone getting on Michael Irvin, some other Canes legends who are now backing Dion in Colorado at times, and Michael Irvin friggin' lost it on this Canes fan.
Well, here's what happened. Look, and Michael has spoken to other teams and organizations, and Warren Sapp has too,
yeah.
And The Rock is an icon. I think he's beyond football. The biggest problem that the diehard Miami fans had was not that they went to go speak to Deion Sanders' team, because they are friends. I get it. There are certain things that go beyond football. What upset a portion of the fans is that when they went to Boulder a couple weeks ago and they went to the game on the sideline with Nebraska, they actually wore a Colorado Buffalo gear.
Ooh.
Steve, I'm not going to lie to you.
Right.
Michael Irvin's my all-time favorite athlete from the University of Miami. It was kind of jarring to see him with that Buffalo on his chest. I don't really have a problem with him being there, supporting the team. You can wear your Nike gear or whatever. And what really helped set this off, or also put a little match to the flame, was Alonzo Highsmith, Hurricane great from the 80s, who was a teammate of Michael Irvin, played on those great Renegade squads, and he now works at the University of Miami football program, basically the football general manager. He put up a Facebook tweet with the three guys with all their Buffalo gear on, saying, you know, I wouldn't do it. If it was me, you would never catch me in another team's gear. That's when it really started to take off, that story. And, Steve, I'm not going to lie to you. As a diehard Miami fan, it did kind of rub me the wrong way to see guys wearing other paraphernalia from other programs.
I'm good with that. I didn't know all the background. I'm very good with that. Steve Kim is with us. All right. Back to good coaching, or actually continuing with good coaching. Mike McDaniel and what they're doing with the Dolphins, and almost an arrogant, like kind of Canes-like from the 80s and early 90s. They're killing the Broncos, and then they do this like reverse flip pass. I mean, that is the height of arrogance and execution.
I've never actually seen that. So it's the reverse. It's they did the orbit motion, and it looks like they're going to run an end around, and they do a no-look shovel pass. I've never seen that before. And Mike McDaniel has put together an absolute track team. Think about this, Cofield. Henry Waddle did not play yesterday. That's the scary part about what they did. One of their sprinters did not play. And I'm not a Dolphin fan, but as a football fan, I am very, very curious, and I want to see Tua stay upright, because I want to see how sustainable is this over a 17-game season, and what kind of numbers can they procure. And that young rookie running back, Devin Achane, he's an absolute sprinter. I saw him last year at Texas A&M. He's another guy that runs a legitimate 4.3. Mostert is another guy that's one of the faster running backs in the league. So they have speed at every position. And the creativity of Mike McDaniel, I haven't seen anything outside the box quite like this that seems to be ahead of the curve since Mike Martz in the late 90s with the Rams.
Tua was looking. Let's relax.
Well, I'm sure he's peeking out. He was peeking out of the corner of his left eye.
No, it's Deion all over again, playing loud music and everybody fawning over it. No, he was looking.
Oh, really? We're buying it too.
You're probably the type of guy that says that Magic Johnson was looking with all his no-look passes.
That's John. That's JVT.
You can't just enjoy the art form,
exactly,
the artistry that we saw at Hard Rock Stadium.
Yeah. JVT is a bitter old man, although he's like 20 years younger than us. All right. Speaking of old men, and I don't want to sound like an ageist, but we had a lot of ageist moments this weekend. Skip on Fox came up with the notion that Dan Lanning is actually afraid of Deion in the future, and he finished off a tweet by saying, hashtag he coming. There's a lot in this. Should a 70-year-old white say he coming?
Well, first of all, then you need to follow that up with pause. But there's no doubt. Old Skipperoo needs to go to the doctor, because he's got a very, very viral case of, it seems like, white guilt. I actually saw the first segment of Undisputed, and oh my God, the crying and the whining from those three.
Yeah.
Keyshawn Johnson actually said that Dan Lanning, all these other coaches across the country, they came together like, what, with Voltron? To beat, hey, first of all, Dan Lanning's an excellent coach. I don't think he needs a lot more outside help to beat a 23-point underdog. And what they did was very simple. They were just a better team. I don't think it's an indictment on Deion. But Deion Sanders and his team, with their behavior at times, like stomping on the logo, trying to rub it out, putting their cleats in it, they make themselves a target. We talked about this last week. If you are going to act in this manner, you better be ready for the blowback and teams to be incredibly motivated to face you. And this whole notion that somehow Dan Lanning was unsportsmanlike,
oh my God,
it really is. That show, Undisputed, it begins to lose credibility when they just cannot tell the truth. Oregon was the better team. Dan Lanning was the guy with the better team. And that's it. That's the story. Yep. Bottom line.
Dish it, take it. Simple. If you want to dish it, then you're going to get it back, and you need to take it. You know what's funny? On the game broadcast, it was like the middle of the second quarter, and Joe Tess is on the game, and he was like, he sounded depressed. Like, why are you sad? Well, like, oh, it's the end of the story. Like, it's not the end of the story.
Well,
just call the game.
Part of it. I want to see when Deion says, look, here's the ironic thing, Steven. I want to give Coach Prime credit. He's actually acting and behaving better than anyone involved in any way. He's actually saying, you know what, get me now, because it's the worst we're going to be. They whipped our butts. They whipped us all the credit. He's the one guy that's not whining and crying. He's actually saying all the right things. This is part of the story, and I've said this to you, Steve. I hope that he actually sticks around far beyond his son's eligibility, because it's going to take some time to build the trenches. They have a lot of speed on the perimeter, really good skill position players, and obviously a great quarterback. But I would like to see Deion give this 5, 6, 7 years and see, can he actually build a sustained program like a Kirby Smart and guys of that ilk, because he's going to be able to recruit. But I think it is part of the story. And guess what, Steve? The story's not over. They play USC this week at home. So this is part of the journey. But I actually give Deion credit. He's showing a level of maturity that a lot of his, I hate to say it, groupies lack.
Steve Kim is up on Cofield and Company. His spot is presented by Snack Nutrition, SNAC, snacknutrition.com. Real quick on this one, because I do want to get to the Canelo fight before we get you out of here. What is going on? This feels like a work with Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce. What is happening here?
Well, now it's becoming the most overblown story. It's interesting with Travis Kelce, all of a sudden he's coming out as a pitch man for Bud Light and Pfizer. Huh, that's interesting. And now I guess that made him eligible to date Miss Taylor. And I think in a year when they break up, Taylor's going to have some football-related songs. Look, that's going to make watching Kansas City Chiefs games unbearable.
It already was.
Just when you thought that Patrick Mahomes' wife was the most unbearable, annoying white woman, now Taylor Swift comes along. Good grief.
All right, what's going to happen with Canelo and Charlo?
Steve, there's a particular pattern this year in major fights that the fighters coming in off a year-plus layoff who are facing other elite fighters have gotten smashed. Mm-hmm. Josh Taylor, Errol Spence, Stephen Fulton. Jermell Charlo has not fought since the May of 2022. Canelo has at least been a little bit more active. He fought in May, and Jermell Charlo is moving up 2 weight classes right off the bat. All of those things, unless Canelo has turned completely old and is going to go backwards physically, I can't see anything other than a relatively late-round knockout for Saul Alvarez.
Okay, do the unheard of, because we've had this in the past one time that I can remember in the fight game. Please tell us that Canelo at minus 420 is good value.
In my view, it is, based on... Right. I'm not seeing a lot of people pick Charlo, to be honest with you. And although sometimes the most obvious factors and the most obvious choices are the right ones to make, I guess you could say that there is value in betting at minus 400, I guess. But you know what the real value is? In picking the right guy for the right reasons.
Exactly.
And I still have questions. Do I think Charlo's going to be the quicker, faster fighter in the beginning? Yes. But I have great question marks as to how he's going to handle getting hit consistently by Canelo. If you go back to his fights with Brian Castaño, one of which we were very fortunate to walk away with the draw, he was not the most elusive fighter, and Canelo, I believe, is a sharpshooter. So, look, if you were saying, Steve, gun to head, regardless of the odds, who would you pick? I would go with Canelo.
3 knockdown rule coming back this week with Mario Lopez. By the way, is Mario a Chargers fan?
He is a Chargers fan, and I'm going to press him today because we're going to tape the show in about an hour and a half. He knows the Spanos, so he has to be very diplomatic. But, I mean, come on. I guarantee you, right around this time yesterday, he probably wanted Staley fired. So, I mean, the next game, maybe Staley will go for it his own 3-yard line, and who knows? The guy's lucky. The guy's lucky to have a job. Steve, really, Cofield.
Steve, we'll talk to you, man. We appreciate it.
All right, thanks, guys.
There you go. Go on, put up a banner of A.C. Slater and freaking lean into it. Let's go. Hammer the Spanos if you want. You don't have to be soft. He knows them. Must be nice.